extra time is exactly how I find out what's going on in the MLS.
Get lost. Get lost.
Maybe this podcast has influenced me a little bit as well.
Everybody up here, every single day, goes into the office, into the laboratory, to try to cook up some great stuff for you guys.
That's why he's here.
Oh, from New York, New York, you are listening to Extra Time. I'm Andrew Wiebe with my partners in soccer, Matt Doyle, David Goss, this mug of hot chocolate. It's a wonderful day. Four teams remain, three games to go, one champion to crown. Conference finals coming up Saturday, MLS Cup on December 9th. I missed your question. What did you ask?
I interrupted your intro. Do you say your own name?
No, I thought about it, but this mug of hot chocolate has brought new life.
Jesus, you have
to be on
this
chilly day.
So times in 5 minutes.
I made the decision before the show. It's the first time I've done it. It's chilly. We're all sort of bundled up here, and it has got sugar, a little bit of cocoa. It's just taking me to a new level.
This is like the most Kansan conversation I've ever had.
Got a cable knit sweater on.
Anyone who says the word cocoa is a person I've never met before.
That's the literal spice.
Yeah.
It's the flavoring. It's a big weekend, big show here. We are going to dig very deep into the Coot 2 Conference Finals. Hell is indeed real. Cincinnati, Columbus, 6 p.m. Eastern Time, MLS Season Pass on Apple TV. Coverage starts at 5:30. Kaylin Kyle hosting, Sasha Klesch and BWP and myself in the studio. We'll watch that game together. There'll be a full hour starting at 8:30 p.m. Eastern on MLS Season Pass. Coverage leading into LAFC Houston at 9:30 p.m. Eastern Time. Should be a wonderful Saturday, and we will then know where in the great state of Ohio we are going on December 9th for MLS Cup.
Is this the best week of the season?
Ooh. I do think the weeks where it's
well,
not...
Well, Doyle's thankful for League's Cup. So.
Right. Yeah. Well, that's my thing.
But there was an element to League's Cup that is similar here in that you can watch every game and be completely focused on that one game, understand the stakes like that. There's no sort of debate, question marks. It's like, hey, this is for a spot in Cup. And there's not, hey, there's 14 games on tonight. Are you going to choose the right one? Are you going to be me and choose the wrong one and always see someone else tweet about an awesome goal as you're watching a scoreless game? There's none of that. One game, watch it. Second game, watch it. Know where you're going for MLS Cup. It's perfect. By the way, this time of year is also about the Spotify wrap. We got a bunch of people hitting us up. Noah tweeted me this morning and said, Extra Time Radio, I enjoyed every one of the 3,468 minutes I spent with you in 2023. Thank you. I did the math on that.
Yeah.
2.4 full days, like no sleep days.
Also, is
24
that...
hour days, so almost.
Is that all new episodes?
Yeah,
like, did
I
produce
so.
That much content this year?
I did the math on that as well, and I believe that we would produce... conservatively, if it was 80-minute shows twice a week for 48 weeks, which we're at this point, conservatively, that's what producer Maria and producer Anders would like, but we don't listen to them, it would be in the region of 7,500 minutes a year. So Noah was impressive. Then Noah Castle-Young hit me up in my DMs.
Wait, so there's two Noahs.
Two Noahs.
Two Noahs.
Two Noahs.
Two by two.
I'm not faking this. He sent me the screenshot. You listened to Extra Time. For 13,003 minutes in 2023, the year is not done. You're a top 0.05% fan. That means more than nine 24-hour days this year, Noel Castle-Young was listening to this podcast. That means he likely listened to either every show twice or every show plus all of last year's shows.
Love that.
That's incredible. And before you think, well, what's Noah Castle-Young doing with his time? Remember, we did that with our time. We produced that content.
I wasn't ready for that. That
correct.
Hurt.
Yeah. That hurt. Was, yeah. Yeah. So all the minutes
I thought
that
about that
else,
on the first
yeah,
one.
All the minutes that everybody else is saying, well, I listened to this minute. It's like, whoa, that's insane. That's amazing that you are giving that amount of your life to listen to Major League Soccer, you know, chuckle blanks. That's probably being a little bit harsh.
Yeah. Not undeserved.
A couple friends talk about the league that they love.
I wonder how much.
Twice a week.
I wonder how much he listened to MLS Today last year with David.
We got to get that back. It sounds like you would be big with the Noah community.
Someone's missing out, so they needed to re-add in Extra Time.
I mean, it's incredible. I did listen to old episodes, dated episodes of Extra Time way back in the day, in like the 2010, 2011 years when I was working from afar as a freelancer in Kansas City. I listened to episodes that were not relevant anymore because I was a sicko in that way.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm so happy to know that the legacy lives on. From one Noah to another, and any other biblical listener with any other name out there.
Your third child, Noah.
I might have to. Well, let's not knock on wood.
Methuselah community, maybe.
Knock on wood. We're trying to. If we go third, we like to have a girl. So, no offense to the Noahs.
Noah can be whatever you want.
Yeah, maybe Maria.
Yeah.
Yeah, that sounds like a decent name.
Okay.
All right, let's get into it. Cincy, Columbus, 6 p.m. Eastern.
We're not doing 45 minutes on Thomas Chankele, right off the top.
Well,
designated player signing. Because MLS never ends.
Thomas Chankele or Tom Barlow to the Chicago Fire.
And rumors around Dixon Arroyo.
I don't know if there's... I guess there are rumors.
The stove is hot.
It's burning.
Yeah.
Get your hot cocoa ready.
Tom Bogart actually skipped Thanksgiving just to report on that Tom Barlow story.
You've been chasing that news down for a while. Spent the last couple weeks trying to get the Tom Barlow news. Barlow reportedly to the Fire.
I think Tommy Scoops has got the new Sounders DP, for what it's worth.
Oh, does he?
Ooh.
Does Tommy Scoops know that you're scooping Tommy Scoops?
Just get scooped on his scoop by you?
Don't trust the wrong people, Tommy. That's what's up. Cincinnati, Columbus, let's get into it. We're going to start with the big story, the vibes, the narrative. If you will. Hell is real. Rivalry in the conference finals. We don't get this many times. We did the sort of mental cataloging, Doyle. We really only came up with one true rivalry in a conference final. What was it?
It was back in 2016, Montreal versus Toronto, the Canadian Classique. That rivalry match, or matches, because it was two legs back then, happened 2 years in a row in the playoffs in 2015. And then in 2016, but only in 2016 was it in the conference final. If you think back over the history of MLS, obviously been a lot of great conference finals. But like that great in 2003, I think it was San Jose, LA Galaxy matchup that came in the semifinals. The early Metro Stars, DC stuff, that was the rivalry back in the day that came early in the playoffs. So this is it, right?
Like Portland, even Seattle have met, but they've never done it in the conference final.
2018, I think.
2018 was the conference final, no?
I thought that was a conference semi.
We double checked this with producer Anders. Okay. If he is wrong,
my bad. When was that? Is a Cardinal Zarek sin? Explaining.
I thought that was a conference semis, but now I'm googling it right now.
Would they be in the conference finals in 2018? It would be great if we had known this before we got here.
Well, you rely on a Sounders fan, and this is what you get. Nope. Portland Timbers Sporting Kansas City was the conference final.
Yeah,
wow.
There you go. Yeah.
I don't even remember.
So this is it, right? Like, and we made this point when we were doing the previews. Like, this is basically the biggest stage that this matchup can take place on, because the like two Eastern Conference teams can't meet in MLS Cup because of the regional seeding. Can't really meet in US Open Cup. It could happen in Leagues Cup, or it could happen in CONCACAF Champions Cup, but like the chances of that are very, very small. This is the biggest stage for Hell is Real, and it's extra spicy because Cincy are great this year. They already won the Supporters Shield. They went far in Open Cup as well. They are, you know, playing to be remembered as one of the best teams in MLS history. If you 69 points and a double, then you are in that conversation. And of course, over the past couple of months, nobody's been better than the Columbus Crew. They're playing incredible soccer. They have, you know, Lucho was the best player over the course of the year. Over the course of the last couple of months, Cucho's been the best player in the league, other than maybe Bouanga, who has an argument on both of those. So it's like there's all of this is coming together to produce what I'm really hopeful is not a 0-0 draw.
Oh, and by the way, to up the stakes just a little bit more, whoever wins hosts MLS Cup.
Right.
So it's not just to go to MLS Cup. It is to host MLS Cup, to give yourself pole position, to win a championship, to have your rival in the rearview mirror on the way there. I got to give credit to my guy, John Zidar, who hit me up with, I was talking to him. He's a you know, Tifo Sweat OG in Columbus, basically. And I was like, hey, what are you thinking about this game? And he said, I think this is as big as it gets.
Yeah.
So full credit to him for sort of guiding us to that big picture narrative.
Are there Crew fans in Cincinnati, like from before they existed?
Yes, I believe so.
That's an interesting.
Yeah.
I wonder how many, because I mean, if you are from Cincinnati, right, and you're an original MLS fan, then the Crew is almost certainly your team from the jump. But then when Cincinnati comes in, I think you get you get to file a one-time
switch. No, 100%. Yeah, I'm not complaining about that at all. I'm just curious what that crossover is. And I would add in my mind, one of the seminal moments of FC Cincinnati becoming what they are was that 2017 Open Cup run, which starts with beating the Crew.
Right.
And there's a great section of Crew fans at Nippert Stadium of yellow. And then FC Cincinnati, that's the first MLS team they beat. Then they go on to beat the Fire after that, which I think was one of the big moments of like going from, oh, this is a fun thing to like, oh, this thing's going to continue to grow.
Commissioner Don Garber was at those games.
Yeah.
It is pretty...
There's a straight line from those crowds to Cincinnati getting into MLS. The other thing I want to point out here is like there is actually antipathy and animosity between these fan bases, even though there is presumably some overlap in terms of Cincinnati-based folks who used to be part of Crew supporters groups maybe, or you know, certainly Crew
fans.
There had
to have been overlap when Cincy were in USL, where it wasn't just a one-time switch. There had to have been Cincinnati
people
that said to themselves,
like, yeah, Cincy's my USL team.
Yeah.
But, and it's I don't want to say unique, but it's at least distinct because when Philadelphia got into the league in 2010, a lot of those Philly fans were OG DC United fans. And because of that, there's just a lot of respect and a lot of ties between Sons of Ben and Screaming Eagles and Barra Brava. It's never really developed into the type of, hey, we hate you and you hate us, and that makes us hate you even more. Like, that type of thing has never happened for Philly and DC, but it feels like it has for these two teams. Like, there's some real mean being said about each other online, and frankly, you'll love to see it.
It is interesting because these teams aren't, not teams, these cities aren't traditional rivals, right?
I think they are.
Yeah,
I think I asked the
Columbus folks, and I think there is an element of that, but at least sporting terms, it's more about Cincinnati-Cleveland because Columbus hasn't had direct competitors.
Yeah, because you don't have an NFL college team. Yeah.
Yeah.
Right?
I think Cincinnati, again, this is according to Columbus folks, Cincinnati folks might think that differently, have sort of like turned up their noses at the rest of the state a lot and been like, oh, well, we're just a little bit more special than you are.
My understanding, which comes, I think, a little bit jaded because I think it's a lot of people who are like Kentucky into Cincinnati as well, is like Cincinnati is Southern and represents itself as Southern, where the rest of Ohio is more Northeast. And so there's like a cultural difference between the two. In terms of sports, yeah, Bengals and Browns would probably be the biggest one in that. Yeah.
Reds and
Guardians. Those are different, but they're different.
Leagues. Yeah, fair.
Bearcats and Buckeyes.
There you go.
Go back to the early 60s in college basketball.
Yeah.
That's where it's at.
I have no idea about that history.
What about last weekend in the Big 12, Cincy fans, huh? How you like that?
Oh, boy.
No Jason Bean running it down your throats. That's
no
what's
one
up.
No cares. Yeah, okay. Sorry, I just wanted to cut that off.
He started yelling about other sports, and I felt like...
This is exciting. It's going to be fun. It's going to have a special energy, as you guys talked about. And then you throw the soccer side in, right? Of like Nancy and Noonan and two clubs that I think are going to be here for a while. They are not like flash in the pan, and they are not at the end of like, we have to win now. When you look at the age of Cucho or even just Nagby and Diego Rossi and the guys who are going to be there for a while. We know Lucho has been extended. We think Miazga will be there for a while. Celentano will probably be a part of this. Then you have more pieces coming in that you're growing around. This feels like the start of something special, and there's a difference in how you play the game, in how you treat the sport. And there's excellence on both sides. And so I think that part is like, you take all that off-field stuff and then you step on the field and every element is there as well.
The stadiums too. I know we're going to be in Cincinnati. TQL looks incredible. Haven't been. Would love to go to Fermless Cup. Lore.com looks just as awesome.
Yeah, it's good.
I've only seen it out of a hotel room window on a cross-country trip from Kansas to New Jersey.
Oh, you didn't get
there too.
No one wanted to take the tour during the drive?
No. It was a little chilly outside. Stress levels were
nice. I went there for Campione's Cup, I believe, for Columbus.
It looks amazing.
Yeah.
And of course, we've spent a ton of time at the old Crew Stadium, whether it be covering games in MLS Cup, among many. Going to games, tailgating for Dos Aceros, or what we hoped would be, and Mexico unfortunately lost that one. Barely remember. But yeah, it's excellence, and it's not just the players, it's the front offices. It's the decision to bring in Chris Albright, to hire Pat Noonan. Tim Bezpachenko just continues to build incredible projects. The state of Ohio seems pretty securely at the top of the Eastern Conference, and like it'll be there for a long time. Now,
and Just to add, if I was a betting man, I would say in 3 years, the conversation we have about Albright coming from Philly, we'll talk about Columbus and Cincinnati of like, oh, this guy's an Albright disciple. This guy's a Tim Bezbachenko. Yeah. Like, it feels like there could be 4 GMs across the league in the next 3 years that came out of these clubs. And then you add in coaches as well. Obviously, Laurent Courtois, his experience, Yohan Demey's under Nantes as well. And then you've got Kenny Arena and maybe Dom Kinnear as well, working with Pat Noonan. So it feels like these are going to be the new like tree clubs that everyone else based off.
Timing is everything in a championship season. Timing is tough for FC Cincinnati right now.
Yeah.
So Obinna Nwobodo has been in and out of training, not participating fully. It is very cold in Cincinnati. There's been some element of like training indoors. So there is that. He got stepped on the foot in that Red Bulls series, and that's been the issue for him so far. He didn't even make the bench against the Philadelphia Union. Pat Noonan has said that they were sort of cautious on that, that they thought he might be able to leading up to, but when he couldn't make the bench for that game, what is it to think that he could start a game a week later of this magnitude? It's hard to believe that. Santi Arias is back in full training and was available off the bench, so maybe he's available for Cincinnati, but the big one continues to be Matt Miazga, who was suspended against the Union for yellow card accumulation, 3 yellow cards in 2 games against the Red Bulls. Of course, the big one coming in the penalty shootout. And there was an investigation announced. The investigation is still ongoing. Witten got the latest news this morning, and it's going through due process at this time. And MLS will share an update from the Disco once that's available. There is a real possibility that Matt Miazga will not be available to play this game for FC Cincinnati in the biggest moment of the year against their biggest rival with a trip to MLS Cup on the line.
I would argue it's 2 best 11 players missing. It's already the defender of the year if Matt Miazga's out missing. They survived versus Philly. It's a whole different challenge. The pressure Columbus will put on you defensively is different than what Philly's capable of, and especially Philly last week with Carranza coming back from injury and being rusty and all those things. And so it's going to be a whole new challenge. And as you said, very often in these moments, it's who's hitting the right spot at the right time. It doesn't feel that way with Cincinnati. In saying that, they've sort of scuffled their way past 2 rounds. They are the home team. They are going to be favorites, whether those guys are in the lineup or not coming into this game. But it's as big a loss as it can be. And Mosquera played really well in the last game. He obviously pops up with the goal, but I think it's less Mosquera and it's more the other guys that have to step into
it's the trickle down.
Yeah, and it's lack of depth now. A week, you play a week, then you come back into this one. Who's behind Kubo? If Kubo has to start again with Junior Moreno in central midfield, who's behind Ray Gattis? Who's behind Alvis Powell? You pick up early yellow cards. What are your other options? It starts to chop down the available players and the players that you trust in a team and takes away the high-level talent, which is one of the things Cincinnati has in all these matchups, is they probably have 6 of the best 8 players on the field in most of the games they play in the playoffs. That starts to go away when you lose Miazga and Nwobodo.
The other thing I'll just sort of throw out there, and we don't know anything. We just know it's ongoing. There's a decision to be made. They're in due process. Based on what has been reported and talked about by Pat Noonan and others, I would posit that there's a possibility that it wouldn't just be one game if he is indeed suspended for the conference final. It could even be MLS Cup if they get there. The price of that decision to get the third yellow and then everything that happened afterwards could be massive for Cincinnati. Pat Noonan has to deal with it. He's got to put a team out that can win, Doyle. What does that 11 look like for you?
I think you might want to just run it back. Do what worked against Philadelphia, and it's a different game. Scratching out a result and surviving a knife fight against the Red Bulls and then against the Union, it's going to look different against a Columbus team that is more about possession and more about throwing numbers forward from kind of odd angles. They attack really effectively and kind of distinctly from within the league, and that's where I think the biggest miss is going to be Miazga if he doesn't play, because a veteran, a leader, vocally, an organizer, that's why they got him. More than just the physical stuff or the distribution, it's, you know, a veteran center back is worth his weight in gold because he makes everyone better by being very loud and very clear and very quick with his organizational commands. And against a team like Columbus, who hit you from different angles all the time. Man, that would be a very big miss, and it puts a ton of pressure on Mascara, a ton of pressure on Alvis Powell if he's starting, because again, no Nick Haglund, he is out for the playoffs, and then Ian Murphy, who had huge play to make the goal against the Union. He's a good player, but he's also a target when the ball is on his foot for opposing teams to pressure. It limits this Cincinnati team in a very real way.
Look at in the previous game against Philly, a game that you thought was probably going to go to extra time, played at a high intensity level. Cincinnati made two subs. They brought on Dom Baji and Marco Angulo. You look at the rest of this team, Santiago Arias, obviously as a starter, did not play. That's a health thing. Pass Arias, your next option is Sergio Santos, another forward.
Right.
The other four subs on the bench are FC Cincinnati 2 players, which was the second worst team in MLS Next Pro, and or our academy kids. So, like, are you going to play Malik Pinto and London Aghetto in this game? No. Yeah. They don't have options. They don't have choices, and they don't have depth. Now, if Arias comes back in, now you have a decision you can make.
Right.
If Arias is back, do you play Ray Gattis as the right center back, or do you play Alvis Powell there if Miazga is suspended and Arias comes back? And I think that's a legitimate decision that Pat Noonan and his staff will have to make.
And it does give them a little bit of flexibility. But just tactically, in terms of what it does, though, and what we saw against Philadelphia, they weren't able to play into Philly's diamond at all. And you don't particularly want to play into a diamond. You want to stretch it out and, you know, break it with long diagonals. They weren't really able to do that either. But the thing that Miazga in particular is very good at doing when building from the back is hitting those third line passes into the feet of the defensive midfielders, Junior Moreno and hopefully Albino Nwobodo. Without that, it becomes very linear, very direct for a Cincinnati team that I think, look, they can do the direct thing. They've done it really well for 2 years now. I think they're at their best when there's a little bit more misdirection to how they're playing. And I worry that without Miazga, if he's not going to play, without Nwobodo, if he's unable to get out there and be 100%, I worry that they're going to lack that.
The other thing I thought they struggled with against Philly was without having someone coming forward along the right side, it felt like Lucho and Barrial took too much focus.
You're not impressed by Ray Gattis's attacking contributions?
In the first half of the last game, he didn't even try. It was much better in the second half. There's a clear intent coming out of halftime. Lucho went over to the right side like a ton in the first half to just find the ball.
Doesn't usually do.
No, and then all of a sudden they started missing some of their pressing moments because Lucho was slightly out of position. Now let's flip to Columbus Orlando, where like 80% of the Columbus attack comes down that left channel towards Schlegel in that game. That's going to be Powell or Gattis and Arias, healthy or not healthy, whatever it is. Like, Yaya Boa, he's out there to attack, right? Diego Rossi loves to take that left channel. Cucho likes to live there as well. There's a ton of pressure on that position, and that's where FC Cincinnati will be at their weakest.
Just want to throw out the results from this year in Major League Soccer. 3-2 early on in Cincinnati. Cincinnati jumped out to a 2-0 lead. Crew came back. Celentano made a huge save. It was the save of the year in Major League Soccer to help preserve a win. That win was fueled by an error by Patrick Schulte. Of course, Schulte was much better, was, you know, perhaps even in game winner territory against Orlando, or at least game preserver. So 3-0 in Columbus. Now, Matt Miazga didn't play in that game. It was Haglund, Murphy, and Gattis in that three-man back line with Powell at right center back. And the Crew ran out to an early 2-0 lead, put it on late, 3-0. Dom Baji started the first game. Aaron Bupinza started the second. Dom Baji had the quote-unquote Dom Baji game, which is what we talked about after that first Hell is Real, where he went to the end line and flipped over the boards, but had the assist to Acosta, and then drew a penalty and almost set up another goal that was eventually offside, though the ball hit the back of the net. Would you start Aaron Bupinza, your designated player, or would you start Dom Baji, who is more direct and maybe better at playing behind and through a Crew back line that has been a little shaky in those moments?
There's a strong argument for Dom Baji, because whether Miazga's out there or not, the ability to lump a ball into the channel and have him run it down and put some fear into that crew back line, because it's not just the wing backs who get forward. Steven Moreira and Malte Amundsen, the outside center backs, they'll both get forward too. Bodgy's directness and ability to get there, like, that is a strong argument,
it's a shortcut to isolation, basically.
It absolutely is. But Pens is a better player. Depends as the guy you went out and you spent a lot of money on to bring in to win games like this. And he's already shown it in the playoffs. He showed it against the Red Bulls. Now, he was not good against Philadelphia. He, time after time after time, he got on the ball and was not as interested in making the correct play as he was in doing something fun on the ball. And as a neutral, I kind of appreciate that. I think I would have appreciated it less if I was one of his teammates. But you got to get your talent out on the field. You're already down two match winners if Nwodo and Miazga can't go. You can't limit yourself.
It's also not the same test. Philadelphia is a better defensive team than Columbus, even though Philly's not still in. Like, it is a different challenge. And so you want Boupens out there because there's space. The advantage about playing Columbus is they're going to give you chances. You need to finish them. Dombaji, I trust less to finish those opportunities than I do Boupenza. Even if your play on the ball is poor, Columbus is going to make a mistake in the back at some point. If you play high enough off the field, Boupenza, you want there to take advantage of that at a minimum. Then you add in the fact that the pressure he can put on Moreira and Odmanson and maybe Pulmo Farsian and all those people affects the way Columbus can get forward. But when you play the crew, you need to be able to score because you're not going to shut them out. It's just, even as close as Orlando got, you're not going to shut them out. It's not going to happen. And so Boupens is there for that reason. And then you have Dombaji to come off the bench. You have Sergio Santos as well to come off the bench, which will give you fresh legs and let you challenge. If you play Baji, you're putting a lot of the scoring load on Brandon Vasquez, who hasn't been that guy this year. And so I understand.
Could you play Baji instead of Brandon Vasquez?
I don't think you're sitting Brandon Vasquez at this point.
Okay. I'm just throwing out possibilities because Vasquez is not.
You
want to
play Malik Pinto at center forward? Exactly. You can just throw everything up.
I'm channeling my inner Kalen.
Brianna Pinto.
I am trying to advocate for my guy, Dombaji.
It's great. He's a great part of the team. He helped them get to this point. Like, they don't win a lot of the games early this season, especially the 1-0s. They grind it out. As you talked about, you look at the crew games, him hanging off the right center back and being able to nod that ball back across the box, that's a threat, right? If it was him and Vasquez, they are probably going to win most aerial 50-50s in the box against the center backs or Patrick Schulte. So you create a lot of problems.
I either think he also just doesn't have the same tendency that Boupenza does to just drift into the space that Barrial and Lucho want to occupy, to sort of complicate the relationship that has been so good this year. And there have been really special moments between Lucho and Boupenza as well. In that left channel, they mostly haven't included Barrial. So that's the only sort of thought that I have, in the sense that Baji will sit in that right channel and make direct runs at Admonson or whoever it is, make himself available to get in isolation, push the crew back line back, give space for Lucho to make that second run and occupy a run in the box where he can finish. Whereas Boupenza just kind of feels like he gums up the works sometimes. And that's probably just early chemistry issues. I don't know. They'll probably go with Boupenza. And then Baji will be a good option off the bench. Yeah. But these are the questions that Pat Noonan has to ask himself when it's 90 minutes to go to MLS Cup.
I mean, credit to Philadelphia. A lot of teams seem to have attacking chemistry issues when they do play against the Union, right? So that is, I think, part of what we saw from Boupenza in this, you know, in the conference semifinals. I thought down the stretch of the regular season, I thought the chemistry between Boupenza and Lucho in particular was very good. And I think I lean more towards that being the real
plus attacking. The Red Bulls second leg or second game.
Yeah, after Boupenza came on at the half
he scores the goal.
Right. And I think it was actually in the first half because Baji got hurt, right, didn't he? Yeah. So I get your point, Weeby, and it's not wrong based upon what we saw last week, but I'm not sure it's right either.
I think the way you worded it of, and we've talked about this a lot in the West with LAFC of like match winners.
Yeah.
If you're down Miazga and Nwodo, you can't afford to put a DP on the bench for not a bad, but like a galaxy brain tactical idea for Dombaji when it's like you're missing two of your leaders and your stars, and Boupenza was brought in to be that.
And the other thing is, like, Brandon Vasquez runs into the channels. You know, he's not as fast as Don Baggi, but he's actually better once he gets into those channels, and he could do more things in terms of like his ability to knock balls down, for whether it's Bupenza or Lucho pushing forward to win a second ball, and suddenly you have 10 yards of space. Like, that is actually, I think, Brandon Vasquez is one of his biggest strengths as a striker. So it's, you know, it's not like if they don't put Don Baggi out there, they don't have that ability.
Yeah.
Whereas if they don't have Bupenza out there, I think they sort of tilt too much towards only in the channels and not enough underneath.
There's probably an not insignificant ego management play here for Pat Noonan as well.
Weeby, you need a tissue? You're struggling there.
There's a cough button you could have just hit.
What did I do? Oh, did I? Oh, I'm sorry. I've been struggling for a little while now.
I'm glad we're in an enclosed place.
I warned you 2 weeks ago.
That was like a year ago.
It was. Now I've lost my train of thought. Oh, with Bupenza. Of just the last month he's been on. It's been weird. He's made it weird on his own. Coming back late to Cincinnati, not showing up for Gabon. He is the guy you spent.
Takes a normal record, situation and a makes record it weird. Feed. He's an honorary member of Extra Time. This is a partner in soccer.
He's a record fee. Like, he's your future. So biggest game of the year to get a MLS Cup, you probably just got to play him. All right, coach versus coach. How about we focus on Wilfred here? Because we gave a lot to Patrick Noonan, the decision he has to make. Wilfred Nancy, what are you thinking about? What is he thinking about ahead of this matchup?
I think he has less lineup decisions to make because Mo Farsi, it seems like, has established himself. Most likely, I guess one would be Odmundson at left wing back or left center back. Do you play Zawadzki at left center back? Do you push Odmundson out wide? That's what he did at Atlanta in the second game of the first round, which was a road game. Then he brought Yaya Boah back in for the game at Orlando. So that's a slight decision he has to make. And then the last one would be, does he bring Christian Ramirez back into the starting lineup because he scores the goal? Just also, I think what Christian Ramirez said, which clearly came from Wilfred Nancy, of like, he brings something different. Matan, Rossi, and Cucho take up similar areas. I don't think that will be the same issue against Cincinnati because I think the game will be a little bit more open and it will be less packed in around the 18 trying to pass it around and everyone's trying to play the same slip pass. And so I think the three attackers that started against Orlando make sense in this game, and then Ramirez comes off the bench as a target forward option. Maybe if Miazga doesn't play, it shifts your thinking a little bit because now Christian Ramirez can maybe dominate matchups with an Alvis Powell or a Ray Gattis or Mosquera if those are the, you know, center back options in this game. But I think for the most part, that stuff's simple. I think what's keeping him up at night is, one, the play where Duncan Maguire plays Ivan Angulo through. And how does he close things down centrally, whether it's one of the two forwards dropping or Lucho finding that space for a through ball into the channel when his team gets higher up the field? And as good as Aiden Morris was in the previous match against Orlando, it's a different challenge dealing with the MVP who's out there to be an attacking mid. Mauricio Pereira wasn't out there to do that in the last game. So Columbus now has to deal with a new challenge of how do they protect their back line? And I think that's what's going to keep him up at night. It's going to keep him up in terms of, he knows that they have to push numbers forward to create chances against a good FC Cincinnati defense. How does his back three or back two or whatever it looks like in those moments deal with Cincinnati in transition? I think that's what's going to really worry Columbus. But the decisions of, like, we know how they're going to play, right? They've gone into four playoff games and they've tried to play the same way every time. And credit to them, that's one of their strengths.
That's what Nance said earlier this year. I remember he was asked by one of the local reporters, you know, how do you prepare for a different team? And he says, I don't. I prepare my team.
So sick.
Right? So good. I prepare
also
my team.
Also, always a lie, which I appreciate from every coach. We just focus on ourselves. Oh, are you doing a video session? Yeah, on the other team. Okay, cool.
I kind of buy it with Wilfred Nancy, though, because they don't change a lot based upon what, like, they don't have the same patterns of play that, like, a Seattle do or LAFC under Bob Bradley. They had, like, very rigid patterns of play. It's a little different with, it's more like principles of play with Columbus, whereas, like, okay, if you step, I'm going to drop. If I drop, you go over here. Blah, blah, blah. And like, so you end up seeing similar stuff, no matter whether they're playing against a 4-3-3 or 4-2-3-1 or 3-5-2. And they've had a lot of success this year against teams that have mirrored them and try to play three at the back with wing backs and however you want to mix up the midfield, whether it's a 2-1 or a 2-2-1 or anything like that. I think they know what they're about. And I think what we've seen from them throughout these playoffs is that they're super confident about their ability to execute it. Now, they can get caught. They can throw too many numbers forward. I think if that kept Wilfred Nantse up at night, we would have seen a change from them already. And I think that the reason we haven't is because he knows that's their best. I mean, that is their best chance of winning games, is to attack, 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 get 60% of the ball, put the other team under pressure. And if you don't, you get what happens in extra time against Orlando City when Patrick Schulte had to stand on his head. And Patrick Schulte is a good young goalkeeper with a bright future. I don't think you want him doing that 2 weeks in a row.
Now, on the Schulte thing, I think we have to say, because we talked about it as a weakness and then his strength in that game, it's a different skill set to be a shot stopper and then controlling your box and playing with your feet. And so
we've said that all year.
Right,
about
he
Patrick
is good at that part. He's a good shot stopper.
He's a very good shot stopper.
He struggles to come out and play. What we saw in the previous matchup with Cincinnati, the chance he gives up, he's coming off his line trying to play the ball. That's where Lucho takes it. So it's not a shock that he was able to do that. But what Doyle's saying is, like, Columbus are bad at defending in a low block. So if they don't have the ball and it's not high up the field and they're not using it, similar to what we'll talk about with Houston, they are putting themselves in a worse situation that they're probably not capable of sustaining, especially at Cincinnati.
There's some sort of mental block there for them as well, where I know Wilfred says, hey, we have to control games with the ball late to finish games off. But against Orlando, they lost control of the game.
Yeah.
They weren't able to maintain that.
Now, and it's not unusual, right? We see it all the time. Teams go up one, you know, a pretty even game. A team goes up 1-0, and then they just, they ratchet down the intensity by 2% while the other team ratchets up the intensity by 5 or 10%. And even if you're a man down, you can take control of the game. And so it's not unusual to see that, but the crew, like, they got away with it in Orlando. I don't think you get away with that twice in a row, not against the Cincy team with this kind of firepower.
66% possession for the Crew in Columbus. Now, there's game state to that because since he went up 2-0 in like the first 20 minutes, 61% possession in Columbus.
You just said in Columbus twice.
Sorry. Well, since he was the first one, Columbus was the second one. Ever since the cough comment, I'm just rattled.
Oh, God.
I'm rattled. All right. Let's finish this one off here. Star Spotlight. Who's more likely to win the game for their team? Lucho or Cucho?
Oof. I couldn't pick one. That's what's fun. That's what's exciting. I'll say Lucho because I think what he brings to the field, although Barrial does it as well, I think is more unique for more unique, better unique, very unique, most unique. Which one do you want, Doyle?
More distinct.
Than what the other player profiles are for Cincinnati. And I think in this matchup, with the way Aiden Morris and Darlington Nagbe have to be involved in the attack and the way they step in, he's going to find some gaps and has to be dangerous. They have gotten this far without Lucho being at his best of what we saw throughout this MVP campaign in the first half of the season. I think they've gone as far as they can in that conversation. If Lucho doesn't play and have a similar effect on the game as he did in the first half of the season, I just don't think you can go to an MLS Cup.
I think that's all correct. I just question whether or not Lucho can have that kind of game if Miazga and Nwobodo are missing. And it, all things being equal, if Cincinnati was reasonably healthy, if they were missing one or two starters instead of three or four, I would probably say that Lucho would be the guy to come out of this and lead his team to MLS Cup. But the Crew don't have any injuries. They have more depth. Cucho's already got 4 goals. He's looked the part. And then the added bonus of being able to bring on a true number 9 and change the game. And Cucho is then just as comfortable being a setup man as he is being a finisher.
Christian Ramirez's chemistry with Cucho this entire season has been elite.
He's on the t-shirt.
Like, insane. Those two just seem to kind of have a great understanding of where the other one wants to be. And Ramirez isn't just a finisher. he's just as much a I'd like to set you up forward as he is I want to finish. That's a huge tool off the bench, no doubt about it.
Yeah, so I kind of lean towards the crew and Kucho, but who knows if Noboto and Miyazaki are both available in this game from the start, then I reserve the right to change my choice.
Efficiency battle, I think, is going to be one that the crew have to win, and they didn't really win it in the first 90 minutes against Orlando. They created a bunch of great opportunities, and Orlando just scramble defense and finishing wasn't there. I mean, Kucho took like a record number of shots.
Yeah, but 80% of those are like, there's nothing else happening. Let's see what the deflection falls.
There goes.
I don't want to lose the ball here.
There goes efficiency then. When you get the opportunity, find a way to get the shot off. They couldn't against Orlando. Without Miyazaki, can this back line
match
what the Lions were able to do in those scramble moments? And that's where I get a little bit like, I'm not so sure.
Yeah, I'm with you 100% there. Because if it was, you know, the full, healthy first choice back line for this Cincinnati team, you'd say, yeah, they could do exactly what Orlando did. They've been doing it all season long. And those reads that Janssen was making, but also Dagger Dan getting back. And I thought Santos was good at left back. Their ability to work and be connected, it was tough. It made it tough. It turned good chances into half chances, and that's what you have to do. You have to narrow the margins against a team as good in the attack as Columbus are. Without their first choice players, it's hard to imagine Cincinnati doing that for the full 90 minutes.
So one thing I'd add, and it's tough because both these teams are coming in as completely different opponents than what the other teams just faced, but Cincinnati came out and was all over Philly for the first 20 minutes, where Orlando came out and sat deep. I don't think as much of the game will be played as deep in Cincinnati's defensive third as Orlando played. So that takes away some of the like Janssen having to scramble and make blocks because everything's happening in his own box. Cincinnati will play higher up the field. They have more of a threat going the other way. So the game states there will be a little bit different of like Mascara doesn't have to play that game for them to get a result.
I still think the crew like that. I mean, They fancy themselves a crit against any sort of tactical approach.
Yeah.
But if you come out and extend your lines a little bit,
I think it might be better for Columbus. Behind,
yeah. Like yeah. That, if I'm Wilfred Nancy, I'm like, cool. Yeah. Don't turn the ball over because we're going to come.
Push your line higher and let Rossi run that back line. Yeah. That's the dream scenario for Columbus. And it happened maybe one time against Orlando because they sat too deep and Cincinnati won't do that. But that just back to was why Lucho matters. Because again, you need to score goals.
X factor and prediction. Get us started, Dave.
Which team am I doing X-Factor on?
Anyway, it doesn't matter.
I'll do Columbus. I'll say Aiden Morris because, to me, he has the biggest variance of performance that we've seen in the star spots for Columbus. Of he can elevate his game like we saw in 2020 MLS Cup against Orlando, be one of the best players, win the ball, help lead the counter press, keep the ball in the attacking half. He scored an unbelievable goal against Cincinnati last time they faced off. But there's a bigger gap there of like, if he doesn't have a good game, he can struggle. We're like, I could tell you Darling Nagby's stats right now, and that's what they will be. I think Cucho's in a similar situation. Rossi's probably there as well. Matan maybe even. So that to me is an X factor because there's variance there and it's a need. Whether Noboto's on the field or not, like Aiden Morris needs to be elite for Columbus to be able to dominate midfield, protect their back line, keep the ball where they want to, lose it in areas they're comfortable with, and then start the counter press. So I think Aiden Morris is one of the keys to the game.
And you think who will host MLS Cup?
I don't know what that means. You go to do the X factor on the other side. Well,
I think Brandon Vasquez is the X factor. He was not good in the regular season, but he was good in Leagues Cup. He was good in US Open Cup. He was good in the Gold Cup for the US men's national team. It seems like he has showed up in a big way in big games this year. And like we talked about 45 minutes ago, the ability to sort of run over the top into space and get at Steven Moreira, that's on the table for him. And I think he excels in those situations. He's got to meet the moment, and he generally has this year. That said, I'm picking Columbus to get it done on the road. I just think the health and availability edge, it's tough to beat.
Picked Cincy to start this postseason. Cincy was, even if one of Wobodo or Miyazaki was in, I would still hold the Cincy pick. I'm going to go with the crew.
Wow. So last time you both went Orlando and I went Columbus.
I didn't remember that, but you certainly have.
Yeah. I'm going to go Cincinnati, and I will be stoked for whichever team wins.
100%.
I think MLS Cup's going to be great in both markets. There's a lot that excites me about both these clubs, which I think we talked about at the top. But I'll take the atmosphere of just affecting that little bit, whether it's 2% less possession for Columbus because you're on the road and you're against the crowd and what it's meant for Cincinnati. And I think you have these star players that can elevate and have big moments. I don't think the Orlando game is a good comp. Cincinnati has a belief in who they are and how they play the game. Orlando played, I mean, we talked about it enough on Monday. This is not the same matchup. And then you add in the fact that you have an MVP on the field, that you have a USMNT center forward, that you have Bupenza, that you have Barrial. We didn't talk about Barrial.
Yeah, we haven't.
Like, I like Mo Farsi a lot, and I'm really excited to watch that matchup because not that Farsi's dirty, but he's physical. And, like, it's going to be a challenge for Barrial to deal with him. And Farsi basically is a center back playing out there with what he can do, and he'll come inside, and he'll attack. So now does Barrial track him? Does he trade him off? There's a lot of question marks there, but Alvaro Barrial is a top 10 chance creator in Major League Soccer coming at you from the wing back position to add into those other pieces that Columbus, yeah, teams don't do well when they mirror them. Cincinnati's not mirroring Columbus. This is who Cincinnati is. And that's, I think, some of the changed elements that I'm thinking about going into this one. So I pick Cincinnati.
It is the best week of the year. You know why? Because we can spend like 40 minutes on
each
one
game.
Yeah. Just digging deep. Cincinnati hosting Columbus. Hell is real. 6 p.m. Eastern time on Saturday. MLS season pass on Apple TV. Once that game ends, you'll switch over to the LAFC Houston stream. We'll have an hour post-game into pregame for that match. It's at 9:30 p.m. Eastern time on season pass. Big story, vibes, narrative. LAFC going for the two-peat, or maybe being branded chokers in the biggest moments, at least in this year. For LAFC, what would a win and a trip to Cup mean?
We talk about them as having one of the best two-year runs in MLS history. I don't think it would be at the top of the heap, but if you go double and then back it up with another MLS Cup and then trips to the final in CCL and a good performance in Campeones Cup, couldn't quite get over the hump, though. Good performance in the League's Cup, couldn't get... Like, that's... There are 29 teams in the league that would kill to have these years back-to-back. Like, that is up there with the Galaxy in 2011, 2012.
Just to have one of the final appearances. Yeah. Forget about back-to-back years.
And I don't buy the like, even if they lose this game, they're not chokers this year. They played, 55 games or something like that across all competitions this season? They've played a ton. And they've done it while trying to move on for move from one generation to another of players. Like, it's clearly Dennis Bouanga's team now and Steve Tarundolo's team in a way that it wasn't last year. Carlos Vela is playing a new position.
I mean, Kellen Acosta is not a full-time starter. He was a linchpin last year.
Yeah.
There's so much that got moved out of this team and for them to compete at the level they've competed across all these competitions.
It's already a successful season for LAFC. Now, they won't feel that way in the locker room unless they win this game. And that's right. They should win this game. They are the favorites. They have, God, as great as Houston is, I think we would all take LAFC's talent man for man over Houston's.
Another backhanded comment for the Dynamo.
I think you could argue first five, you take Houston, even as good as Bouanga is, but not first 11. Like, I think there are more weak links in the Houston.
Let's do it. Don't bring that up and not do it. Who's your first five? Who are you taking off the Dynamo?
For Houston?
Yeah.
I think it's the three center mids.
Yeah. Though Karaskia now plays as the right
Whatever, but then Bossy's in there as well. Those four players. I don't know, maybe Steve Clark in there as well.
Okay, so we're going to go Denny Bouanga. How are we measuring these? This is just straight talent?
I don't know. What we're firing off from
the hip. I think you got to throw, if you're going to say like Artur is in that, Ilya's got to be in that category. He can match Artur, no doubt about it.
I would take
Carlos,
Artur on my
Carlos team. Vela.
Yeah.
Ryan Hollingshead and Diego Palacios.
Right. Carlos Vela was invisible in the last game and then was played in to finish with his right foot and refused to, and they would have been up 2-0. Right now, this year.
I mean, Carlos Vela has 2 goals in 10 career playoff appearances.
Fair. And how many, what, you put Vela third?
I just was throwing names out there.
But how many players are above him? I love Ryan Hollingshead. So that's fine.
I you know, this is fun, but it's not like it's not the real conversation. The real conversation is, do you believe in LAFC's ability to nullify what the Dynamo do well and then go hit in quick transition? And what we've seen from LAFC all year long against MLS competition is yes, yes, they absolutely have the ability to do that. So while I think man for man, you could argue Aceh, Carrasquilla, and Artur over any of the myriad central midfield trios that the permutations that Trundolo can come up with. It's like Trundolo's game model. I don't love it because it's not pretty, but it is so effective. And because it's effective, because you get chances like the one Bouanga scored at Seattle.
This tactical matchup is the most interesting of the two because I think it's the most variable. There's a question mark as to what the Dynamo will do. There's not as much one as to what LAFC would like to do, though they may be forced into a position of having most of the ball in this game. Let's stay on the big story and vibes. Let's turn it to the Dynamo, Dave. Playing with house money here. Like, nobody expected them to be here. Ben Olsen said as much, but this is a huge shot. Anytime you're in a position to win a championship, you got two games to do it. Yes, they're on the road. They've struggled there. But I was thinking about it as we put this show together. Open Cup beating Messi. I mean, beating anybody, but beating Messi in Miami. And if they could, forget the double. You know, keep that in sort of the ideal situation part of your mind. But even just making MLS Cup final, would that be the most impressive one-season turnaround of all time in Major League Soccer? We threw some names out there. 2000 to 2001 San Jose. San Jose had missed the playoffs for four straight years, then went and won.
They won the Wooden Spoon in 2000, and they won MLS Cup in 2001.
Yeah. Frank Yallop, Jeff Agus, Landon Donovan, etc.
If Houston go from being merely a bad team, but not a Wooden Spoon winner last year, to winning the double, I don't think that goes... I don't think that trumps literally worst.
Yeah, but what was San Jose? Eighth in winning the Wooden Spoon?
Yeah, like 12.
Yeah. Where Houston was worse in the standings last year than San Jose because there are more teams.
They were at like 0.8 points per game. Like they were truly, like they were wretched.
So I think they're both similar. Do you want to name your other one?
Yeah, the other ones were, we threw out like 14 to 15 Portland, but it was just a missed playoff to then winning MLS Cup. And they had a big run at the end of the year, if I remember right. So it wasn't like they were some elite team in the regular season. I don't know if the Dynamo were that, but they were in the conversation, especially at the end of the season post-Leagues Cup. LAFC, 21-22, missed the playoffs and then won a double. That might be the one, but either way, this is potentially historic for the Dynamo and just an incredible, incredible turnaround.
And I think for Houston, what the convo is like, it's not just 1 year. It was 4 years of buildup of like, and even before that with Elise, where there was huge question marks of like, what is the purpose of this club? What is the focus? They got Elise, they got Kyoto, they found some talent, Minotis, but it didn't feel sustainable. It didn't feel like they built to get better each year. Once Elise was gone, it felt like there was kind of no future, including under new management last year, where they had to fire their manager, who they hired midway through the season. Aceh comes in, has stated now, didn't understand sort of the requirements, wasn't really committed, wasn't really a part of it. Like, all of it was such a mess. And while Cincinnati didn't win anything last year, it's closer to Cincinnati from 21 to 22, going from a run of the worst MLS team ever to competitive. Now for Houston, they've won a cup already. And if they were to win the Western Conference and go to MLS Cup, it would be an even bigger jump to that high point. And so I think there's legitimacy to the argument of just the sustained run of struggle coming into this year and then how big the jump was to what they've already done. Now, as you said, they've got a chance in a one game to go and win MLS Cup or go to MLS Cup. And I think that's when you talk about the different ways they play and what they can do. There has to be a feeling in that group of like, let's go be ourselves.
Yeah.
You have nothing to lose.
This is what I was saying to we did the match preview for this one. And he was making the point in the second game that these two teams played this year in LA, Houston went there and did to LAFC what LAFC did to Seattle last weekend. They had like 25% of the ball. 29% of the ball.
Second lowest percentage possession
it was
against LAFC.
Classic 2014 DC United Benny Ball performance. And maybe that is the pragmatic thing to do, because you don't get exposed on those quick transitions and you don't give Buonga the type of space that he has just ripped teams apart. But like, you're into the conference final. You have shown the ability to beat basically everyone when you play the way you want to play, with this midfield clicking and doing the tiki-taka stuff that we talked about on Monday show. Go out and do it. Go out.
Can't you still have those moments and do some of those things, but not in totality? Can't you balance the risk reward and still choose your moments to build from deep or to win a second ball, so, and to have number open on the ball?
Open Cup final, they had like 42% possession by the end in total.
That's fair.
But most of the first half, they were who they wanted to be until they had the lead. And then they sat in a little bit more and played on the counter.
Yeah. No, it's a good point. And that does go to the desperation thing.
It wouldn't be what I do, by the way.
Right.
It's just helping Weeby.
There's always going to be some of that balance. But there's also, I don't want to say inevitability, but the way Houston played this past weekend, you could see it demoralizing Sporting KC for good chunks of the game. Now, Houston doesn't have, Quiñones is super talented. He makes the wrong decision in the final third every time. Corey Barrett has had a good year. He is not an elite goal-scoring match winner at this level, I don't think. So they leave the door open. But, man, when they start knocking the ball around like that, you could see the spirit go out of the other team. And when teams, especially at home, get a little desperate like that, there's something to be said for that beyond just what happens in the box score.
And you have players who are in the team because their individual skill sets are geared towards that. Don't make Griffin Dorsey sit back and defend in a low block for long segments of time. Don't make Amin Bassi close down consistently off the ball. Don't make Coco Carrasquillo go out wide and have to deal with Palacios charging at him. Take the game, put your guys in their comfort zone, and play on the front foot. And I go back to...
But isn't it more likely that you're putting, for instance, Coco Carrasquillo in positions to have to defend in that way when you are expansive and provide more space for LAC to run into?
No, you defend high. You counter-press when you lose the ball.
I agree with that part of it.
So?
But here was the game plan in LA. Went back and watched long stretches of the game.
For sure. That was 5 months ago? 6 months ago?
Okay.
I don't think that that's super relevant to...
You don't think there's any similarities in the way that they'll think about this game for the Houston Dynamo?
I would hope not. I would hope that you felt under a new coach with some new players that you have moved from what that was in May.
That was in June.
June to now. So 5 months later, 6 months later, that you have developed over time, especially with what you did in the Open Cup final and the way you went and played.
Okay, so let's start to paint the picture.
Can I just throw one other reference point in there? And it's not perfect. Last year's Western Conference Finals, Austin was the expansive possession team. They ended up 48% possession. LAFC ran them off the field. It never felt like Austin was in that game, because to what Doyle said, they never really put their stamp on the game. They never played their soccer. These are two different clubs with two different teams.
There was a massive talent mismatch in that game last year that there isn't here.
Yes, but there is still the, like, if you don't show up and play your game in that first 15, 20 minutes and feel like you are in it, you are hoping that you're still at 0-0 when you can sort of get your feet, get your legs under you, or maybe get to halftime. Why would you go about that? Why would you go about it that way?
Let's paint the picture here of how we think this game's going to go. What percent possession do you think the Houston Dynamo will have?
29%.
It won't be 29%.
Oh, in this game?
Yeah.
I think Houston will be at 52.
I'll take the under.
I'll take.
I didn't set it on a half. So if this pushes, I'm not paying you guys.
I'll take Houston in the 42-45 range.
Yeah, I think you're right, and I don't want to see it play out that way. I want the Houston that we saw this past weekend. But for as beautiful as it is when Aceh is getting all over the ball and running the show through midfield and, like, he looks like a Barcelona player, let's not forget he's an Atletico Madrid player. So 40% is just fine with him, to your point. Like, he knows how to still make the game in those moments, even when his team is playing most of the time against
I know they won 4-0 in Houston. I just don't think if it turns into...
Can you toss
both of them?
Fine. But if it's an open game, I'm not betting on the Dynamo. Like, I don't think they will be.
You're betting on them.
I think it's much more likely that they will have a chance to win if it's
such weakness inside of you.
Okay. Let me just throw some.
This
stats
is inter-
here.
You're an
let
international manager.
Houston
right now.
Houston has won 1 of 9 road games this year. They had more than 50% possession. They lost 7 of those games.
Okay.
LAFC, flip side, 6 of their 10 losses is when they had more than 59% possession or above. The correlation between possession and winning for these teams, for LAFC, it's not with having the ball. It's not with having the ball.
Yeah. And that's something that we've seen league-wide this year. Over the 15 years or so, the correlation between possession and points per game just kept getting stronger and stronger and stronger until 2021, and it kind of fell off a cliff and to the point where there's almost no correlation. Now, I think the better teams in the league tend to have... I want to say that some of the better teams in the league tend to be stronger possession sides, but also some of the teams in the league that play purely on the counter or through high press, which is what LAFC are best at, or via transitions, are thus lower percentage possession teams. They're also very good.
Let me throw out on LAFC, by the way. They've lost one game in the last 3 months.
Same thing with Houston.
But a lot of these numbers, I'm just saying, are from a group that was either playing differently or different personnel of like Olivero, Maxime Crepeau.
Sure.
They were not in that team. Tillman and I don't think Kellen had established themselves in the same role alongside Ilya. Like, I think the group's a little bit different now.
I mean, Tillman had from the beginning of the season.
For sure. But so one of the big advantages I think LAFC has to, I think the way Doyle said it with LAFC is like the three central midfielders, if Kellen starts, which I think he will, are suited to battle there. Where SKC wasn't.
No, I agree.
Like, SKC does not have the personnel to close space, make life hard. And so while I think Houston will have a ton of possession, I think it will all look more like from the 20th minute on against KC, where it was deeper. And it was Ache playing along his center backs, where I don't think LAFC will extend their line there and close him down, but it's not a super dangerous area. The opening 15, 20 minutes of that previous game, Houston was in the attacking third, and all that possession was in a dangerous area. And then it slowly moved back as KC filled in a little bit more. I think that's what a lot of this game will look like.
I think Houston's going to want to be, in the same way that LAFC does, very, very focused on the repress. I don't think they're going to play a ton in LAFC's final third. But when they get there, I think they're going to want to try to use those opportunities to say, okay, we took the risk. We got the ball further up the field. We advanced our lines. Once we do that, we have to do everything in our power to try to press again, win the ball in dangerous areas, and be direct to goal. Find those little slip runs to Corey Baird. Don't waste that opportunity, not just for ourselves, but don't give LAFC the opportunity to break out quickly when there's space in behind. There's going to be a huge, all those moments where the ball turns over, where either team is up the field, especially when Houston is like where Denny Bawanga is like, cool, yeah, find me in space right now. And that's the challenge for every team that plays Danny Bawanga. Like, it's not like you can get away from that. You're just going to have to deal with it. Find a way.
I feel like Bawanga doesn't get fouled that much for, like, what he's capable of.
He can't catch him.
Yeah, I know.
Who's around him?
You, like, almost have to foul him off the ball before the counterattack
I was thinking
starts.
Of it like a cornerback of the initial bump.
They have to win the,
have to jam
on the line
like
of
you
scrimmage.
You almost have to jam him.
Well, you need to have a body near him to try and control his ability to get out into the open field. Houston doesn't feel well-geared for a lot of this. Like, Griffin Dorsey is better going forward. I would say Yaimar is better at center back than the two options you have. Jao Paulo was sitting over there, and yet Seattle still got burned on it. And so I don't love that for Houston. I think it's just the reality of this game. Just sitting on – Quiñones just has to be Bawanga on the other side.
That's it.
That's the game.
And you know what? We're throwing these games out, so it doesn't matter. Ignore this, but he was like the cut-rate Bawanga in the first game in Houston.
June, what a time to be alive.
I know. Right after the CCL final, so, you know, LAFC were at the top of their game mentally and physically.
You stole Anders' joke. I did. Tough.
So Steve Cherundolo, coach versus coach here, is 6-0-0 in the playoffs. That seems good. We've already sort of talked through the Dynamo, and, you know, we've
What's
been
Ben Olsen's playoff record?
That's a good question. I don't
It's got to be a lot of games in there.
I should have. That would have been a good one for the rundown meeting, but I'll find it later. Ben Olsen poured concrete shoes on Benny Ball, though he may have some elements of that. I think they'll still try to play. They'll just choose their moments. Anything? Do you want to dive into Bwongo a little bit more? Like, how do they try to spring him into space? Have we already established that, Doyle? Any tactical notes that we haven't hit so far?
No, I mean, it does come from, I mean, that ball from Tillman. Anytime one of the 2-8s drops deep in LAFC's build-out, they immediately look to play long into the channel or directly to feet for Bwonga on one side, Oliveira on the other. Like, that is one of the few repeatable patterns of play that we see from LAFC, and it's one of the reasons they are so comfortable absorbing pressure is because they know we're two passes away just every single time. Houston obviously have to watch that, because when they do get on the ball, they do bring Dorsey up, and then Svietchenko has to, you know, rotate out, and it becomes a back three. Svietchenko's been really good. I don't like his chances against Bwonga in the open field.
I don't like anybody's.
So you have to be really, really smart if you're Houston about keeping an eye on both Kellen and, I think it was Tillman who hit the pass again. Yeah, those two guys, when they drop deep, like, that is, we talk about pressing triggers, that's a release trigger for Bwonga and Oliveira. And of course, Velo will come underneath as well and turn the 4-3-3 into more of a 4-4-2 diamond with wide forwards.
And if you're Trundle, I think you're hoping Velo occupies Artur, because you're assuming that on the ball, Ace Ace is going to be out doing Ace Ace things. And if Artur is occupied and Bwonga's sitting in that space and Griffin Dorsey's inched up a little bit,
yeah,
Oliveira is dragging Mikael the other way, that's where it starts to get a pretty worrisome.
Yeah, the just for specifically the goal scoring moment that LAFC had against Seattle, Nuhu was higher up the field than Franco Escobar probably will be most of this game. Part of that is because Seattle was home. Like, they had to push to create chances. So while Olivero flips the field, comes to the other side, that throws Yaimar off a little. It changes Reagan's spacing. Nuhu is also high up the field, and it's two where Franco Escobar probably didn't, for portions of the KC game, I would assume being on the road is different, will have rotated over. And so there's a little bit more help there for support for Svietchenko as he goes.
You can pass Oliveira to Franco, and then, we'll see. Everybody's trying to stop Bwonga, and he's sitting on 37 goals, just one back of Carlos Vela on his historic season. X factor here, I've got set pieces. Svietchenko was the goal scorer in the game that doesn't matter that Houston won in LA. off a set piece, they created three or four set piece opportunities there. That's where the repress comes in for me, is that you're trying to not just win the ball but win fouls if you're the Dynamo in that area. And we know that LAFC have won games on set pieces, not just in this postseason but last postseason. So I'll throw out Ryan Hollingshead as an X factor here, and his ability to find space and a finish in set piece scenarios. And if LAFC have a ton of the ball, or Bwonga's in open space and you got to foul him, there should be some opportunities to serve a ball in.
Yeah, Hollingshead's a good one. I also think run of play, if LAFC does have more of the ball, if it goes the way you say, he's one of the guys who can come inside, change things. He can throw a defense off where you feel like your lines are clean. He adds into the attack and has a good background there. On the Houston side, it's pretty simple. It's Quiñones or Baird, whichever one you want to pick. If one of them is clean and efficient with the chances they create, Houston can win this game. If the two of them don't finish or make the right decision in the final third, Houston will create chances that they probably don't put away. And at some point, Bwonga or Vela will find their chance. And, like, I can't see Houston winning if one of those two doesn't elevate their game in this one.
Interesting. Corey Baird basically had just goose egg zeros on the score sheet for until May, late May, for the Dynamo. Scored three in the Open Cup, scored against Vancouver, and then the goal in the game that doesn't matter in Houston. He scored there, and from then on, he's been on a nice run.
I think we don't even watch on Saturday. I think we replay the June games.
Hell yeah.
We all get together. We rewatch those. Yeah. We live commentate.
Maybe
them.
We can overlay the games onto each other and just compare.
Yeah, compare the games as they go
just
along.
Just see the shape, you know, because, look, Ben Olsen was in a 4-4-2 resty just deep in his own half. Maybe we just overlay this. Could be good.
The absolute disrespect from you guys that you're showing to Mr. December, Franco Escobar. Man has 9 career professionals. Man has
I did
9
not know that was going there
career professional goals. 4 of them are in the MLS Cup playoffs last week, of course, being one of them. I think he had also had one for LAFC a couple of years ago.
And he scored in MLS Cup 2018.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's the obvious X factor here, nice. Folks.
The new Dairon, the fullback version.
Maybe Maxime Crépeau, Steve Clark. I mean, that's always going to be one. Crépeau was huge against Seattle.
Crépeau played his best game of the year against Seattle. I think both of these goalkeepers are a strength. So
yeah, I think that's a bit of a wash.
Yeah.
Chiellini or Long? Or is it a question?
Chiellini. There's no question. There's no question. If you weren't afraid of Jordan Morris's speed,
yeah,
then you're not going to be afraid of Corey Barrett. And
playing on the road and playing in that atmosphere. The only question would be if he can bounce back at his age in a week, which is a good amount of time.
Were you able to bounce back in men's league this week?
I played against two semi-professionals who showed up all of a sudden and decided that they could shoot from every angle. It was two ringers in the playoffs. It was disgusting.
They didn't decide
and I'm in the
moment.
Captain's group chat about it. It was co-ed, not men's league. We lost in the semifinal, and the team that won, they like put a picture in, and then someone followed up like, oh, what team is that? Because they didn't know the name of the team. Mm. But my thing was like, oh, you should invite those two players to come to any other game because it was cool that they showed up for the playoffs and have never played for you before. Shame on you. Shame on you. I don't know which camera I'm looking into because I don't know who on that team would ever know this, but shame
that's
on
some
you.
Good, some good Instagram reporting. You could go back and see previous Graham stories, pictures. Maybe they threw it up on a different time. Get just compare here. The rosters.
I've played this team enough. I would know if there was a guy on the team that I wasn't in with. It was a mini game. I wasn't within 40 yards of these guys. Every shot they took, they would just break my ankle and then just rip a shot.
You would remember.
So Chiellini, I get it. I feel it. It's tough.
How about Nelson Quiñones?
Yeah, what David said. You know, Quiñones and Baird. Like,
oh, I missed the Quiñones part.
There are going to be chances for the Dynamo.
Focused on Corey Baird. Yeah, you know, Crab and the whole thing.
Quiñones has a lot of talent. Like I said, he made the wrong decision every single time in the final third against Sporting Kansas City. There are times where he like very obviously could have slipped Baird through and he shot from a tight angle. And the next time down, he gets to the end line. Instead of hitting it low and hard across the six, he pulls it back to no one, you know, on the corner of the box. It was encouraging and tough at the same time. And it's encouraging because he gets into those spots in the first place. And like there are very obvious things they can work on in film sessions this week. It is tough because it's like the last week of film session of the year, potentially.
Based on what I know, they've been working on film session with that for the entire
season. So it's all there, but I mean, that is a very good X factor, right? Because he, like, if he gets it, if it clicks, then he could, you know, he could be the guy who scores a goal and gets an assist and breaks LAFC's line time after time after time in this one. And if not, Franco Escobar is going to bail him out anyway because it's his time of year, baby.
Predictions.
LAFC is a better team. They have the match winner of all match winners in MLS this season in Bawanga. I love what Houston does. I don't think they can do it to the level they need to and not expose themselves two times. And that is one more time than Dennis Bawanga has needed this year.
LAFC are an underrated defensive team. They press you. They're organized in the back. They win aerials, like one of the best in the league in that sense. And they're not going to give Houston as much space and time and freedom as a lot of the teams in this postseason have. I think LAFC win it. Denny Bawanga scores again. Yeah. My heart says Houston. I love watching Houston. I'm like probably deep down in some way rooting for Houston. I just think LAFC have too much.
Yeah, I mean, no matter what, I think we get a good MLS Cup of like, you're either looking at a team trying to go back-to-back, or you look at a Houston team elevating the soccer they play against the two Ohio teams. But I even step away from LAFC and look at Houston and say, look what they did to KC, and they only scored one goal off a set piece. Like, they didn't finish in the run of play. And their inability to put the game away via scoring that second goal in that game and against RSL, over the course of the series, that's where it falls for me. Of like, even if they give up the two to Bawanga or whoever, I think they could create those chances as well. I just don't trust them to finish them. And at this point of the playoffs, if Jordan Morris can't finish at a high enough level to knock off LAFC, it feels hard to think Corey Baird and Nelson Quiñones can.
Cool.
Corey Baird, Stanford as well. Whoa.
Yeah, I mean, Corey Baird's had a really good year. 14 goals, 8 assists across all competitions.
Against his former team.
Against his former team.
LAFC leads black and gold for 3 months.
He'll get his chances.
Yeah.
He will.
I think he's a free agent too, huh?
Yeah.
It's going to make a little money.
I would say so.
6 p.m. Eastern, Cincinnati Columbus Hell is Real. Coverage starts at 5:30 p.m. Eastern for that one on MLS Season Pass on Apple TV. 9:30 is the kickoff time for LAFC Houston. We have a full hour in the studio ahead of that game at BMO Stadium. Anything to add here? Anything to juice our Spotify listen to numbers that you guys want to dive into, or we feel good?
Did we talk? We did talk about all the other stuff around the league.
I mean, briefly. How do you feel about Tomas Tchankalai and Gustavo Bo? Probably.
Wait, is Bo coming back?
Seems like he's out.
Okay, yeah.
Tchankalai is now the third DP. Okay. The way things stand,
that makes sense to me. With Barrero getting healthy and Tchankalai here and Nacho Heal, the Revs look very much like a 4-2-3-1 team next year, which I think they should be. Got to probably buy out Vrioni and go out and get a DP number 9.
You have to buy him out. Surely someone, somehow, somewhere.
You think?
I don't know. The other thing is, if Gustavo Bo doesn't want to leave, you could potentially get him on a deal where you can bring him back, and then you can sort of leave Vrioni for the year. Like, you have potential DP talent at a non-DP.
I mean, your window's closing soon.
Yeah, but that's why
Carlos Heel's 31 years old.
I think the ideal is that Gustavo Bo would do that. The question is Gustavo Bo down to do that, or are they down to give him that number? Now, remember, they don't even have Kurt Adolfo is making these decisions, I guess, as the interim sporting director, or he was the technical director. They haven't hired a sporting director. They don't have a head coach. So,
yeah, it's a bit of a mess. But in saying all that, someone had their finger on the trigger enough to be like, yeah, this guy was really good. Tchankalai was fantastic this year, coming in a tough spot in midseason as this team sort of fell apart, and he continued to score. I think next year, if he can take over games a little bit more, take some of the pressure off Heal, as well as Doyle bring up Barrero, who is a game breaker on his own. So Tchankalai, I think, can sort of float in and get the ball more and play to his feet, because he doesn't have to be the guy that stretches the field. They could be dangerous and they could be really fun.
Did we talk about Robin Jansen and all the other Orlando players basically advocating for Oscar Pareja?
Oh, no. Back, I didn't even see that.
Which is insane to me.
Instagram reporting?
I think I saw it on Twitter, but whatever. They're all the same. Cesspool. It's insane to me that there needs to be, like, you have to advocate for a guy who's been as successful as Oscar Pareja. And as someone tweeted at me, or blue skied, whatever, at me.
Are you blue skying?
Oh, yeah. I'm trying to switch. That, like, if Orlando, or even if Orlando offer the contract to bring Oscar Pareja back, Joe Mansueto and the Chicago Fire should be like, we'll beat it by $1 million. Just come fix what's happening in Chicago. But, like, it doesn't seem like Chicago's making those kinds of moves this offseason.
How do you guys feel about the sin bin? Should we try out the sin bin on extra time?
I read the whole article about it. Yeah, probably. Really? I deserved it for the
after
open.
After I forgot to use the cough button, turned my mic off.
I think
for
I stepped on you
minutes.
Three times in the open as well, so I probably should have taken 10 minutes off.
Yeah, right, just out the throw you in the sin bin.
Go eat some shawarma, hang out in the back.
Yeah.
Back when I'm ready.
The sin bin is just going to lead to, like, insane amounts of time wasting when you're trying to kill a power play, right?
Well, have you seen if it happens to a goalkeeper, a field player has to go in goal. The way, now you can write it how you want to. What we're talking about is IFAB okayed for, and IFAB is the organization based out of, I believe, Amsterdam, where they okay what rule changes can happen. They don't enforce them on leagues. So now it's open for leagues to do it. And obviously there's been conversation around having players go off the field for a segment of time rather than giving them a red card or a yellow card in ways in which they've affected the game. I think one of the big ones they're going to try and use it for to get out is, like, surrounding the ref.
Yeah, it's dissent surrounding the referee, maybe tactical fouls. Yeah. This could be for 24, 25. Zurich, Switzerland, by the way,
is where it's based, of course. Right. Why would I not? Why would I not have thought of that?
100%.
But this always is always neutral.
You know, if you're an indoor soccer fan, you know about the blue card.
There you go.
So there's an element of blue card to this.
So, but, like, the FA has used it at the lowest level, I think youth level, and then some, like, amateur stuff, and they do 10 minutes.
That's a long time.
And so then when a goalkeeper gets it, a field player goes in goal. Then when the 10 minutes end, you wave the player on, like, coming off an injury. The goalkeeper has to play field until the next stoppage, in which they can officially switch. He's now goalkeeper and this person's out. It's an absurd situation.
Yeah, I don't want this. I don't want this.
The one thing I will say is, I think yellow cards don't actually stop players from doing things, because referees are scared to give a second yellow. And I think red cards ruin games. For the most part, if I'm a neutral and I'm watching a soccer game, I will probably turn off 5 minutes after the red card was given. It's not really soccer anymore. It's not what I tuned in for, especially with some teams, with styles, the way they play. So I think finding something in between to like punish a team for killing the game, but also not ruining the rest of the game is worth finding. I don't know if this is it. Also, don't call it a sin bin, especially here. Call it a penalty box.
I don't know. We've exported enough of our jargon.
Sin bin is a little bit preachy.
Yeah,
no, it's Canadian. Okay. Canadians are now influencing.
Do they not call it a penalty?
They call it
in hockey. Like,
that's the they call it a sin bin.
Do they really?
Yeah, that's where it comes from.
I just assumed it was from England.
No.
In Canada, when they are watching hockey and someone gets sent to the penalty box?
Colloquially, they will call it a sin bin.
Do they really?
Yeah. I learned it from watching Hartford Whalers games as a youth.
I've gotten a lot of Timbits, and I've never heard that before, so I didn't know.
The IFAB also approved potentially referees communicating VAR decisions to the crowd, like you would see in an NFL game, which I
saw at the Women's World Cup.
Yeah.
No, I like that.
And like, I hope that that is a change that is coming, because it's like, just release the conversation to, you know, communicate to the crowd, but also release the conversations between the head official, the main referee.
Well, I don't think the release is the issue, because currently Pro is releasing those inside video review on YouTube. You can go watch that series every week. They release the audio from those conversations. It's just that you can't have it currently on the broadcast, I believe. You can't pipe it in where it's like, hey, we've got a review ongoing. Instead of us hearing from the announcers, well, let's just listen in on the referees as they make this
decision. I think international field hockey and maybe rugby, but I don't know. They do where it's like live tapped in.
Australian rules football too.
Oh, I love Aussie rules. I barrack for Carlton.
I just made that up. I just completely made that up.
Oh, man.
Rhea wants us to end this, so we shall, because Doyle bought us all Lebanese food for lunch?
Oh, yeah. Hey.
What a kind, benevolent.
It's weird. We don't need to talk about this.
All right, adios.